This is The Loving Project, a podcast celebrating the 50th anniversary of Loving v. Virginia by featuring modern stories of interracial marriages.
In this episode, we meet Mike and Kim. They got married in 2015, but they've been together for over 10 years. They're both scientists and met while working together in a lab at the University of Pennsylvania.
Mike's family's from Taiwan, but he was born in Maryland. Kim grew up in New Jersey and went to school in Chicago before moving back to the East Coast where they met.
My name is Kim and I'm white.
My name is Mike and I'm Asian.
And we've been married since May of 2015. And I have a son, Alex, who was born when I was younger. Getting married was not something that I had on my radar. You know, after being together for a few years, I felt really confident that we were going to be together. I trusted him, I relied on him, I loved him, and that was good for me, you know? And so the idea of getting married, it just wasn't of the utmost importance to me. And maybe it's because of my experience. I had a child young. I chose not to get married then. It just felt like a complicating factor. And for whatever reason, like, I was happy. And it was something we had talked about. And we were both, I think, comfortable not getting, you know, being together and not getting married. But then, well, Mike can speak better to what shifted for him.
You know, I think when my dad got sick with cancer and he passed away, it, you know, affected me. I felt like I had to grow up more. And not that, like, getting married means growing up more, but it just means that you dedicate more of your life to someone. And, you know, you see the value in having somebody with you and support you. And you were really there for my dad and me. And I really treasured that. So I felt like, I don't know, it just felt right. You know, I think you could say the same thing, that you didn't really expect to get married. But now that we are, it feels right, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm definitely happy. I mean, and I'm happy we did it. But I was pretty shocked that you asked me. And he chose to do it kind of a, you know.
So it was Thanksgiving, I guess, 2014. I asked your dad at Thanksgiving and your mom, I was like, would it be okay? And they were ecstatic. They were really happy. Like, I thought you'd never ask. So that was great. And then I proposed to her on Christmas. And when I told her family that I was going to do this, and I told my family that I was going to do this at Christmas, everybody decided they wanted to come and be there for it. That year, we hosted Christmas Eve for my family. And then we also hosted Christmas Day for Kim's family. So it was about 3 days of prep and cooking. And this is Christmas Day that this happens, that I propose. And I made this dinner. It's like, you know, a whole side of salmon, a prime rib, all this food. And we're kind of stressed out and kind of tired because it's like, oh, finally, people are going to leave after this. Well, that's what Kim thought. But then people start showing up. Like, my mom shows up, my sister shows up, my brother.
Yeah, so they start coming in and we're in West Philly in our place that was not big.
Yeah, the living room, I would say, is maybe like, you know, small, medium-sized living room. You know, we're all sitting around, and your brother come late because he was working, so he hadn't even opened his presents yet. So we're opening his presents, and then this clown car of family members starts piling in, and you were so irritated.
Yeah.
But then I waited until your brother opened his presents, and then got down on one knee, and I proposed to you. And you were shaking your head almost immediately, so I didn't even get to say what I'd planned to say.
Shaking my head, no, like, stop.
Like, shaking your head out of embarrassment.
I was just like, yeah, it's funny because it wasn't my style to be the center of attention like that.
Although I would agree that that's not your style. I think it made your parents really happy that they were
no,
there
for they
it.
No, so they were so happy. They were so happy. So
there are pros and cons.
It worked out. Well, the sweetest part of it, I thought, was because I think Mike had really prepared something to say. And I remember that night we went to bed and he's like, can I say those things to you that I was going to say that you just wouldn't let me say because you were so shocked and embarrassed. And that's pretty special. Alex and I moved to Philly in 2006 after I finished grad school. And that's when I met Mike.
Right. We worked together in the same lab when you were a postdoc. And I was just about to finish my undergrad.
Yeah. Sometimes I think the biggest thing that we've had to deal with is our age difference. He's 5.5 years younger than me. So at the time that I started at 26, he was just finishing undergrad, which was a little bit strange since I had finished grad school.
You know, there's the age difference, but also, like, place in life is very different for us. You had a PhD when I met you, but I still hadn't finished college yet. And, you know, now we've basically caught up since I finished my PhD last year. And we're both working in like, you know, healthcare services industry. But for a while, there was disparity in our positions, but like not like socially, but just in where we were in life, like how we were progressing. You had a son, you have a career. I was still in school trying to finish up.
Yeah.
We had very similar interests. And we bonded mostly over music. You know, we were younger. We would go out and see shows. And I just remember we would read Stereo Gum and Pitchfork Media and just always looking for the new album, new concert, new show to go see. And we just bonded over that.
But it was definitely like a friend thing. Mm-hmm. Or I felt it was. I mean, you know, at first. But then it's, you know, we just got really close. And so it's like, oh, this could even be a possibility that we could be together. It kind of evolved over time to...
Yeah, I would definitely say snuck up on us. I think because we were such different stations in life, I think it was just finding somebody that shared similar interests was just exciting. And we enjoyed each other's company. And it just snuck up on us. I don't think I had any plans. You say I did. Like, had these totally machinations to, like, you know, seduce you. But I think really it was just, well, you know, the more time you spend with somebody, either you like them more, you like them less. And I think we just found that we enjoyed each other's company more and more.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still strange. I just started a new job and telling coworkers about my personal life because people ask when they're trying to get to know you and, oh, I have a wife and, you know, she has a son, I have a stepson. He's 21. And like, how old are you? You know, they're doing the math in their head. So that's strange. But coming from where I come from, I just expect people just to get over it. You know, like, I'm Asian, get over it. You know, my wife is older, get over it. She has a kid, get over it.
I'm pretty sure that was a deal breaker for a lot of relationships for me with people of my own age, let alone someone younger. So, I mean, it speaks a lot to you that you were kind of willing to go in for the ride on that, which has been, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if I were to check boxes, you know, those would have been boxes I would not have ticked, right? But I got to know you, and that's what was most important. If you go into this like OkCupid and you're selecting profiles, then I probably would not have met you, and we probably wouldn't be married, and we wouldn't be sitting in this house together.
Yeah, it's true. So it's kind of a weird, like, the fact that we met the way we did.
Serendipitous, for sure. There's no other way it would have happened. You know, it's just like right time, right place. So my parents came from Taiwan in around 1979 with my grandparents, my father's parents. They came to rural Maryland to be mushroom farmers, essentially. They had other plans, but that's what they ended up doing. And we moved to a really poor agrarian county where there wasn't a lot of diversity. I think through elementary and middle school, I don't think there were any other Asian people that weren't related to us in our town or our area. When you grow up where I grew up, where there aren't that many people like you, it's odd because I feel like I'm pretty well assimilated. Like, I talk like white people, I get white people, I'm not uncomfortable around white people. But I speak pretty well the languages that we spoke, Taiwanese and Mandarin Chinese. And I really like Asian culture, I like Asian crafts, like origami and stuff like that, and bonsai. Like, those are things I enjoy, but I've also had to assimilate really well. Whenever I'm in a crowd of people, I have a way of being able to fit in. So if I'm, you know, I played sports in high school, so if I'm talking sports, I can fit in with guys talking sports. But, you know, I can also fit in with, you know, women talking about baking or whatever it is, you know, talking about TV shows. I just have this adaptability because I've always had to do that. I've never been in a place where everybody looks like me or acts like me. You know, I would say that when I was a kid, I really wished that I was white and like that I could, you know, just go to school and not stand out and just be like everybody else. But now that I've grown up, I value it more that I can go to a beer festival or go to a conference and I stand out because, you know, I'm a tall Asian guy and it's a, usually have some sort of funny haircut or I dress like, you know, a lumberjack or something. You know, I stick out and people find me often in crowds and when we're out. And I don't not enjoy that now. I do enjoy not just being like everybody else.
We both are PhDs in biochemistry. So that's a pretty diverse field in terms of...
White and Asian.
White and Asian, yeah. It's not diverse fully, but, you know, definitely work with a lot of Asian and South Asian
and people, international people, too.
And people from all over the world. But, you know, in my dating life, I hadn't dated an Asian person before, really a non-white person before, seriously. When I was thinking about the hurdles to me dating Mike, I felt like our age difference, which now feels less and less important. And as we get, you know, when we're 80 and 85, it's going to feel like nothing. But then it really felt substantial. The fact that you were Asian, didn't really play into it one way or the other for me. It sounds like so cliche, like I fell in love with you and that's who you happen to be, you know, it really didn't give me pause.
My high school graduating class, I was the only Asian. There might have been like two Hispanic people, and maybe there were two black guys, and then 210 white people. I don't think I knew a single Jewish person until I went to college. So yeah, I dated almost exclusively white people before Kim. I think that would have made my mom the happiest if I'd met somebody with a very similar nationality or upbringing, you know, a Taiwanese or Chinese American, but they were pretty open. When you live in America, you really don't have a choice, especially when we lived where we lived. And I felt like both of my parents were pretty progressive in that regard.
But it took you a long time to like bring me into your family. Well, and part of that was, I think, with the culture, like, you know, Mike would say, well, they are all going to speak Taiwanese together and you're going to feel left out. I think you were hesitant to bring me to meet them, where I think you met my family kind of in, you know, fit right in right away. I don't think it was them. I think you were kind of worried about that and kept it at arm's length. But then when I was there, it was fine. I feel like they tried to welcome me and include me.
Yeah.
As much as also they're more comfortable, obviously, speaking their native language together.
Well, I think also things with us were, you know, relatively casual to start. So maybe I was a little bit hesitant until I was more sure. But yeah, in general, I'm pretty guarded with my family. You know, it's pretty personal, private space. My family life and like my everything else life is pretty separate. So when I went back and visited with my family, I felt more comfortable when we were just talking about family stuff, speaking our language. And also at the time, you were vegetarian, which made it difficult in terms of food.
Yeah, the first time I came ate at Mike's parents, your mom served me a plate of avocados.
With like soy sauce.
With some soy sauce on it.
And then some noodles or something.
It was so obvious to me how all of this delicious food that she made could have easily been made vegetarian by just leaving out the pork. But in her mind, that was crazy. I wasn't offended by it.
I know.
It was funny. But they always still put out a fork for me.
Well, you're not very good with chopsticks, let's be honest.
That's okay. I wonder if my family says or does things that make you feel uncomfortable. They're so loving. I love my parents and my family.
It's just a lack of understanding.
But they do have, you know, their day-to-day lives are...
Yeah, they grew up in the suburbs.
Yeah.
And they live a suburban life now. I don't take offense. I've heard it all, so... But, you know, sometimes like when your mom and your sister and your brother's girlfriend went to get their nails done or something, and the nail technician introduced herself as like Jamie or something. And your mom's like, I know her name's not Jamie. Like, why doesn't she just tell me what her real name is? And I'm like, well, maybe her real name is Jamie. You know, just like my mom's Juliana, my dad's Joseph. They weren't born with those names, but when they came here, they chose those names for themselves.
I know. My mom was really embarrassed, though, because she just made this stupid comment,
well,
which was stupid to say.
Your dad was like, your dad was right on. He's like, well, you know, people choose their names. Like, your name's Elizabeth, but you choose to go by Betty. How's that really any different?
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're great people. I think it's just, if you haven't really thought about it, it just seems peculiar. And then you think, oh, well, you know, people... a lot of times choose their own personal nicknames, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, well, but that's your parents.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, God, you know. Like, the only... I can think of an overt racially charged situation that we had was... remember my brother's party.
Oh, yeah.
My brother He lives in South Jersey. He has like a more working class job and crowd and, you know.
He works at an oil refinery.
Yeah, fully white friends. And he had had this Halloween party. And we walk in and this woman was dressed in like a stereotypical Chinese costume.
She had a coolie hat, a robe, buck teeth, the Coke bottle glasses. And her husband was dressed as an Arab with a dynamite vest or something like that. Like both are just like racial totally stereotypes.
Offensive. You know, I saw this woman, you saw her, and it was like, oh my God, like you're walking in as the only Asian person, right? She's dressed as like a stereotype of your culture.
Yeah. And then she comes up to me and she's, you know, says, oh, can I take your picture? Like, in like the voice. And I was just like, get away from me. And I just walked past her. I was like, I mean, again, I've heard worse. So I was just like, it for like 10 seconds, I was just really confused. I was like, we still live in this world.
And I felt bad that that was like my family. Like my brother would be friends with someone.
It was your brother's boss.
It was my brother's boss and his wife. You know, I felt bad for putting you into a situation like that. Like that, I felt like that would never happen. And the fact that it did. It's kind of a silly example because it's really over the top. But, you know.
Yeah, I would say
I felt bad about it.
In general, most of the racial discrimination I feel as a grown-up or, you know, kids say really mean things. And it's really easy to pick on somebody who's so obviously different. But as a grown-up, I feel like I'm not like the target of pernicious attacks. People aren't like aggressively going after me. But there are like subtle things. And that's a little less subtle, but it's just preconceptions.
That was not subtle.
Right. But that wasn't aggressive either, right? She just thought it was funny. You know, but it's just, I'll stick out in a crowd. It's like, oh, your wife is white? You know, it's little things like that. Or people have certain expectations of me based on the way I look. They get surprised when they find out about my interests in, say, like beer or something like that. It just seems surprising that I would have interests outside of their stereotypes. And it's just maybe they haven't met very many Asian people and they were not fully fledged and like full portraits of diversity. And they just think of us as, oh, he's a PhD in biochemistry from an Ivy League school. And they just kind of box me into what they perceive me to be. But I'm not. I'm more than that. And I am that, but I'm more.
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking to another couple friend of ours, one of whom is black and one of whom is white, and I said, I don't think on a daily basis about us being of different races. It's just not something that enters into my everyday consciousness. And I said to her, you know, do you? And she said, yeah, I'm black. Like, of course I do, you know? So some of it I think is like, is it me being a person that has had the privilege not to think about this? I think there's some of that.
I think for me, the interracial marriage thing never really thought of it as being a problem.
Did you ever know, like beyond our contemporaries, did you know of like mixed race couples?
No.
Yeah, I was trying to think that.
Well, like, that's not true. That's not true. I knew one. My mom's friend in our small hometown. She lived like the next town over. She was Vietnamese and her husband was like, he was in the military during Vietnam War and he brought back, you know, Auntie Lan from Vietnam. So I knew them, but yeah, other than them, I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, so that's really, you know, because to us, if we think about like we have a number of friends that are from, you know, couples of different races and genders and all kinds of diversity, but like, yeah, the model that I had growing up was not like that. If we have a child, you know, we don't now, but if we do, like, then I think maybe that's something I think about too, because, you know.
Yeah, that'll be different.
We don't know what they would look like. And
yeah, and I wonder, right, if we have a baby that doesn't look like you, Kim, how would that make you feel? And especially when you're carrying around this little Chinese baby, you know, do you think people will react to you differently or do you think people might not understand? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, people say stupid stuff like all the time. So, I mean, it's something that you have to think about. But I just mean like, you know, I would want to make sure that they never had those feelings of feeling other, especially within their own family and home. You know, I don't want that for you. But even more so, I wouldn't want that for my child, you know, this hypothetical child.
Yeah, I just don't know. We live in a evolving world, so who knows what it's going to be like by the time they have enough awareness of what life is like. Although I would say, you know, in our friend circle, in our work circle, it's pretty diverse.
Yeah.
So maybe they won't feel like I felt growing up.
Maybe. I mean, you've been mistaken for Alex's dad before. And Alex was like, not my father. But that's kind of cool that kids are like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
We got engaged in December and we got married in May because I felt that we had already been together for 7+ years and what's the point in dragging this out? So we just kind of got on it and, you know, found a place we could do it. And
we invited, you know, close friends and family. It was about 100 people and it was very DIY. So it was very reflective of our personalities in that we did a short ceremony. We didn't do a first dance. We didn't do cake cutting. We didn't do any of that stuff that we felt like other people do because they feel like they have to do it. We did what we wanted to do. You know, I brewed 4 beers for the wedding. I made some cocktails. I made origami for Kim's bouquet and the centerpieces.
We danced for like 5 hours.
Yeah.
Pretty much our wedding was like, you know, an hour party. Of cocktail and a couple of speeches and then a big dance party.
Yeah.
But it was fun. But so when we were planning the wedding, again, a cultural expectation, his mom comes to us and asks, well, how many guests can I invite? And we were...
You.
I told Mike, I don't want to meet anyone at my wedding. It ended up being really easy. Like, yes, we want these people here. And, you know, we only invited...
a hard yes to get an invite. Somebody was a maybe got dropped.
Yeah, I said, if they're a maybe, then no. So when his mom asked this, I kind of said no. And then Mike said, well, you don't understand how this is important to her. You know, so then we thought, okay, well, maybe we could tell her she could have like 8 people, like 4 couples or something. So we're having dinner with her. And she says, I thought about who I would like to invite. And I only, you know, the very minimum, it's 30 people. And I was
we're
like,
well, we're only having 100 people, Mom. Like,
yeah, we're only having 100 people. But what I had learned in the background was that Mike's sister, who had been married before, she's divorced, she did not allow Mike's mom to have a Chinese wedding banquet. So we were sitting at this table and with your mom, and we said, well, one idea would be that if you wanted to have a Chinese wedding banquet, that could be opportunity to bring like all of your friends. And then she like immediately got on her cell phone starting to talk to one of her sisters about it. So I think she was really happy. And
she was.
She was totally like, fine, I'll show up at your wedding, but my event is the Chinese wedding banquet,
she
which
planned
she planned. And
so in traditional Chinese culture, a wedding banquet isn't like what we think of in America, where you have a ceremony in a church and then a reception afterwards. A Chinese wedding is usually at a banquet hall where all the guests are seated at tables and dinner is served and there's toasts that go on during the course of dinner. But usually the parents host and they're the center of the attention, and the intention is that they get to brag on their kids. They get to show off to all their friends this wonderful wedding that they planned for their kids and how much they love their kids. So that's what a Chinese wedding is. An American wedding is very different.
Everything was like more formal than our actual wedding.
We did Evites or like paperless.
Yeah, we did everything electronically.
But she had these custom invitations.
From Taiwan.
Yeah, printed in Taiwan and sent them all out and like took
which,
all
the only
RCPs.
English words on it were my name.
What's your name?
Which she sent to my family too.
Right. And then she took care of the food menu planning. She took care of everything and we just showed up for that.
We brought the wine. That was it. She put us in charge of that because she
I made place cards too. I made origami place cards she wanted me to do. But other than that, we basically just showed up.
She said, wear a red dress and that's it.
Yeah.
So we had that in July.
It was also about 100 people.
And I met many, many people for the first time at that wedding.
I met some people I didn't know before at that wedding.
And everyone had fun. My family had fun.
It's funny, though. Originally, my mom said that we could invite some of our friends.
Oh, yeah. So we told some of our friends.
We told some people that they could come. And my mom was like, I sent out all the invitations already. The tables are all full.
So we didn't have any.
Which is fine because our friends came to our real wedding. So it was okay. It was a fun experience looking back in hindsight.
It was, she was happy and that's what mattered.
She was happy.
It mattered to both of us.
I'm glad that you were willing to do that for my mother because I wasn't sure that I was willing to do it.
Yeah, I think I was.
Like if I had to convince you,
You were just like, let's invite the 30 people to our wedding and be done with it. And yeah. I was like, that I felt so strongly that I'm like, I am willing to go through this banquet. Our dream is to move to Hawaii. I mean, we've only been there once because it's kind of an expensive trip, but we went to Maui. It's amazing. And of course, it's a paradise and we're hanging out on the beach, so who doesn't love it? But I think something that you really liked about being in Hawaii was that everyone assumed that you were native there. And I think it was kind of a neat experience for Mike, because we definitely remember we went to like the food truck and you got like the, they gave you like the real deal. You know, people look at you differently when they think you're a native and a local, and
but it's still America.
That's not why we want to move to Hawaii eventually. But it was cool.
It was appealing to live in America where I didn't stick out, and that I wasn't a Chinese American. I was just American. I just looked a different way, but I could fit in. It was really appealing not to stand out. I mean, I've been to Taiwan as a grown up, and I speak the language, but not. You know, I speak Taiwanese or Mandarin like somebody who took college classes in it, where it's not fluent. And when people are talking, I still have to translate in my head in Taiwanese and in Mandarin. So when I went to Taiwan as a grown-up, I did feel very much an outsider. I did not feel like I fit in at all. Like culturally, it was different. The way people acted and spoke, the way street signs looked was different. But in Hawaii, I felt it was America still, you know, and I felt very at home. You know, the culturally Hawaiians tend to be very easygoing, like, you know, full of warmth. I really enjoyed that. And they look like me and they talk like me. And we have very similar keystones of culture that we share.
Yeah, it's kind of funny listening to that. It's like, it's kind of very you, right? It's the mix of the two worlds.
Yeah, it was a really cool experience to be in. And Hawaii is pretty diverse too. There's like people that look like me and there's people that look like Kim. And in that sense, it felt very at home. It seemed like, you know, a mix of Asian and American influences in one place. So that's part of the appeal to me. But yeah, you know, when you've always stood out and you've always been pretty unique, to just kind of fit in and not have to worry about presenting yourself like nobody's going to notice me in a crowd. If I'm going shopping here at the mall, I think people notice me just because I look different. But there we went shopping, I'm just like anybody else. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's very unique.
We'd like to thank Mike and Kim for sharing their story with us.
You can find The Loving Project in iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere else you find podcasts. And if you like the show, please consider leaving a review.
You can also find out more about The Loving Project at our website, lovingproject.com. where you'll also find pictures of some of the couples profiled on the show and ways to follow us on social media.
And if you're in the Philadelphia area on Saturday, June 24th, stop by the Bill Russell Gallery in Fishtown for the last day of our Loving Project exhibit, featuring photos and audio from The Loving Project. You can find more details at our website. I'm Brad Linder.
And I'm Farrah Parks. Thanks for listening to The Loving Project.
In the next episode of The Loving Project, we hear from David and Eric. David is white, and he's a Presbyterian pastor. Eric is black, and he's a writer, a performer, and a playwright.
They married in 2016, nearly 5 decades after the Supreme Court legalized interracial marriage, but just a year after the court legalized same-sex marriages like theirs.
The Supreme Court ruling for me opened up, as a pastor, what I knew to be true, that God blessed all unions and that was possible. And so for a lot of people, it was a celebration of a legal victory. And for me, it was this victory of God's love in the world. And it was really powerful to have that moment.
It was like a light went on in a room that I didn't realize was dark. Sort of like when you're sitting in a space and like it's getting close to evening. And you look around, you're like, oh my gosh, it's actually darker in here than I thought. And you turn on the light and you're like, oh, I feel better. I didn't realize how uncomfortable I had been. I didn't realize how all of the things that I was primed to believe about myself, that I was worthy of love and marriage and family, were constantly being denied. So to have that affirmed, that I could conceivably get married, was amazing.
Eric and David's story, coming up next time on The Loving Project.